Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Caller, and we've got another great show for you today. Now, if you're listening on the website right now at freedomactionnetwork.com, I commend you. You're there. You have access to all of our archives. But if you're not subscribed to the show, you're missing out on an even easier way to get the show to your device. And that is whether that's your phone, your computer, your tablet, what have you. And that is by subscribing to the show on one of the many available apps. If you're an Apple user, you're using Apple Podcasts. But if you're an Android user, you can use one of the many apps available on the Android system. I myself am an Android user. And I use Podcast Addict to get my podcasts. So you can listen there. If you're listening on the app already, thank you. I'm glad that you're already with us here. I hope you have already subscribed. And that if you are, thank you for being with us. If you're listening on the radio waves, if you're listening on the air on one of our weekend shows, whether it's the Saturday show or the Sunday show, then I want to welcome you. And if you've been listening for the last few weeks, I want to give you some good news. There's an easier way for you to listen to the show. You don't have to tune in at that specific time. You can catch the show online on freedomactionnetwork.com or by subscribing to the show, as I was just mentioning, by searching What Matters in North Carolina on one of the many podcasting apps available on your phone that I'm sure you've got in your pocket right now. But just by simply searching What Matters in North Carolina, you can find the show and subscribe and take all the effort out of getting the show to your device for your listening. And also, you can listen to the show at your leisure. Now, before we go any further, I will say that this show is sponsored by the Civitas Institute. That's the nccivitas.org, North Carolina's conservative voice. They sponsored this show and all the shows on the Freedom Action Network, which are also available on the Freedom Action Network website, freedomactionnetwork.com. But this show is sponsored by the Civitas Institute. And also, another product of the Civitas Institute, much like this network, is another project I work on called NC Capital Connection. And there you can listen to, you can read state news, state political government news. And to do that, you can just go to nccapitalconnection.com. And while you're there, go ahead and sign up for the bi-weekly newsletter. That's twice a month, every 2 weeks on Thursday. You'll get a newsletter from NC Capital Connection highlighting some of the recent stories. And there is a sign up right there at the top of nccapitalconnection.com to do that. Now, none of this tells you what we're talking about yet today on the show, and we've got a good show for you today. First, we're going to tune into a fairly quick discussion between Civitas Institute President Francis DeLuca and Susan Myrick, who is also of the Civitas Institute, where we will be listening to Susan and Francis discussing a recent article of Susan's that has to deal with a concerted effort from the left, from left-leaning organizations, back in 2012 when former Governor Pat McCrory was elected to resist and stop things from happening that the administration wanted to happen, and how that effort is still alive and well in the state. But then we will talk with Dr. Robert Lipke, who is the resident education expert at the Civitas Institute, and we will talk about college readiness for high school graduates and really going and looking on up through the process to see, are our graduates ready to go to college, ready to go into a career, or ready to go enlist in the military, or really, are they just ready to function as adults in our society and go to that next step, whatever that next step may be? And the answer, sadly for a lot of them, is no. And we'll talk about why that is and maybe what can be done to help it. So you'll definitely want to catch that segment. But before we get to that, I want to talk about following along with us on social media. To do that, just go to Facebook and Twitter, search What Matters NC, and you can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and you'll be able to hear some more from us there. But we also want to hear from you, and to do that, make sure you're calling that call-in line at 919-747-8063. Leave us a minute or two message, keep it clean, keep it concise, keep it on whatever topic you want to talk about. If it's good, we'll play it on the air. And if it's not, it may end up still being a touching point for us to have a future segment, and we will give you a shout-out on that segment, of course. Now, without any further ado, we'll get to our segment with Francis and Susan.
This is Francis DeLuca. I'm the president of Civitas Institute, and I'm sitting here with Susan Myrick, who is the elections policy analyst for Civitas. And good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Francis.
You've got a new article that just posted this week about titled North Carolina's Blueprint, Eviscerate and Cripple Strategy is Alive and Well.
You remember the eviscerate strategy, don't you, Francis?
Right, right. That was rolled out a few years ago and really was aimed kind of squarely at Pat McCrory and the legislature. And so you it looks you're updating what they're doing, what the left is doing. So kind
this,
of
right.
Tell us what you're doing. What's
this
here.
Strategy was rolled out right after the election where Pat McCrory won in 2012. And it was a meeting of the minds of the left, of the mighty left in North Carolina. And they rolled out a strategy that they went to work on immediately. And while the media never identified it as such, you can see things like the Moral Monday movement and the left working along with the media to demean and demolish the right in North Carolina through the last 3 or 4 years.
Now, you've used a word there, I think, and people might not understand it. You said blueprint.
Right.
Explain what Blueprint is.
Well, Blueprint NC is a nonprofit organization. In North Carolina, there's right around 200 left-wing nonprofit organizations. And at a time a few years ago, the major funder, and who still is a major funder, Z. Smith Reynolds, took a look around and said, you know what, we need an organizer because there's so many groups out there. We don't want to keep funding all the groups that are stepping on each other's missions. So they really got a hold of what they were doing on the left, organized it in such a way that they didn't duplicate missions and that they helped each other. And they did this by creating another nonprofit, and the nonprofit's name is Blueprint NC.
And where can people go to find out? I know there's a website.
There is a website. Civitas recognized kind of late to the game, but still, that there was such a montage of groups out there on the left, and we created a website called mappingtheleft.com where you can find the hundreds of groups there with the thousands of people that work and are part of their boards and more than 300 funders to those groups. And what we've done is link them, because in the left, it's all about connections. They're all connected in some way, and that's what we've tried to do through mappingtheleft.com.
So let's take a step back to where we were. With the election of Pat McCrory, the left actually had, instead of a whole legislature, they had a single person to kind of concentrate on.
That's right. They had a face.
They
could
face.
Demonize. And that is a major rule of the left. They find that face, that personality, that one that they can demonize. And that's why it's really hard for the right in North Carolina, because the left is so many people, so many organizations, that it's hard to focus on one entity to try to explain what's going on.
Well, and we'll get to kind of the many faces of the left before we leave today. But so it looks like they were pretty successful. Pat McCrory lost re-election, but for a number of reasons, including the left's attacks, but there were other reasons too.
I think you said it was a death by a thousand cuts.
That's what I said.
Yep.
by a thousand cuts. But so, you know, why this article then? Why do you mean the strategy is alive and well?
It continues. Last week, and there was an article that came out through WREL, which is really part of that
left
wing.
Why do you say they are part of the left? I can answer that.
I'd rather you do that, because you wrote an article back right at the time that strategy memo was discovered, and WREL was forced to report on it after Charlotte Observer did the first reporting. It took them a while, but they didn't at that time discuss their link to this Blueprint organization.
Well, the reason WREL is kind of very critical here, and Capital Broadcasting is the WREL parent company. The Goodmans family is the one running it now, who are descendants of the Fletcher people who started REL. In terms of politics, they are night and day, though, between the Fletchers and the Goodmans in terms of their individual politics. And the Goodmans are pretty much leftist.
Right.
As some people would like to have called them now, or used to call them, limousine liberals. They're very rich, but very liberal. So REL has a foundation called the A.J. Fletcher Foundation.
Capital Broadcasting.
Right, yeah. Capital A.J. Fletcher Foundation. And the Fletcher Foundation was known for supporting arts. It was known for supporting the opera, dance, and some schools, special needs schools and stuff, all good kind of community works. But under the new kind of regime that's running Capital Broadcasting, the Fletcher Foundation has expanded hard into supporting social justice organizations. And if anybody's not familiar with that term, you can look up social justice warriors, and it's the left way of trying to impose a new cultural order on us. So they started supporting all these groups on the left, which we identify in Mapping the Left, and we identify where the Fletcher Foundation has supported them. Well, REL actually supported the groups in Blueprint with their money. And at the same time they're supporting these groups in Blueprint with the money, they're not reporting on things like the Eviscerate memo that came out back in 2013. And in this case, where they're interviewing Bob Hall, they're kind of not talking about their links to supporting the groups that Bob Hall is part of, like Blueprint North Carolina, the all the things that the Fletcher Foundation has contributed to. So does that
That gets us up to last week when the WREL all of a sudden had an article out there that was questioning Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest's association with a nonprofit organization. A nonprofit organization that donated or loaned TV videotaping equipment to his office. And, evidently in the article it said about $61,000 worth. And they were criticizing him for having a TV studio in the governor's office. Lieutenant governor's office, sorry. And that was the gist of the whole article. And of course they pointed to critics of this relationship, and we knew it before we even saw the name. We knew that critic was going to be, because it made sense. It was going to be Bob Hall of Democracy North Carolina. Democracy North Carolina was a founding member of Blueprint and has played a major role, if not the biggest role, in the last 4 years of attacks on the right, on the legislature,
on the last four, Yeah, and you're right. And the interesting thing was two points. One, that the equipment that this nonprofit put in the Lieutenant Governor's office was never transferred ownership. It continued to be owned by the nonprofit.
Right.
So it wasn't like it was a gift to the governor or the state. It was strictly for their use.
And that's what it's almost comical, because in the article, Travis Fain was the writer of this article, almost sounded like he was jealous.
And that in the article, and if people want to read it, they can go to ncivitas.org, right, and actually read the article for themselves.
It's in a featured article. So
in the article, you mentioned that there was kind of disappointment that the governor, Roy Cooper, had to walk across the street to the Museum of Natural Science to use the equipment in the Museum.
That's exactly what they said. Well, the governor didn't even have this kind of equipment in his office. He would have to go outside of his office.
The street.
They even suggested that he sometimes used a camera and a cameraman at the Museum of Natural Sciences, which is just right down the street. And so with a little bit, Francis had some inside information that I wasn't aware of. And then with a little bit of research, what we found out was probably the equipment that he's using at the Museum of Natural Sciences was
donated. We're not quite sure. We can't really tell.
It was provided by none other than WRAL or Capital Broadcasting.
And they don't mention that in the article.
Oh, absolutely not. And this is typical of the way the mainstream media, especially right now, WRAL works.
Right. So, they're criticizing something that the lieutenant governor is doing while being quiet about the fact that REL provided equipment that may be being used by the governor now.
Right. And what it is they provided some TV equipment and cameras and things like that. And they even in their they've now got a room in the Museum of Natural Sciences called the WRAL 3D Theater. And this is where the equipment is. And what we found with financials is that the the Friends of the Museum, which is another nonprofit working within our government, which shows that the nonprofit relationships with agencies in the government is not unusual. But that nonprofit is paying back down a note to Capital Broadcasting every year to the tune of a quarter of the take that the 3D theater, because they charge for the 3D theater, the WRAL 3D theater, every year. And that comes out to about $140,000, $150,000 a year. And they've done it. We've got the IRS forms for 2012, 2013, 14, and 15, I believe. So we've seen 4 years. We don't know if there was any prior, and we don't know if it's continuing. But right now, they've paid back at least $600,000 on a note.
Well, so the final point is that why are they going after Lieutenant Governor Forrest?
The Lieutenant Governor is the ranking Republican in North Carolina now. He seems to be the it makes sense that he is going to be the gubernatorial candidate in a couple of years. So
against Roy Cooper.
And it's interesting because it makes sense that Bob Hall and Democracy North Carolina are part of this. And Bob Hall's relationship to government is even more interesting because he heads up a nonprofit that has been very, very closely aligned with the State Board of Elections for almost two decades.
So another nonprofit in state government.
Huge. But interesting enough, his nonprofit has been secretive about it. And
He's a registered lobbyist.
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
Well, Susan, hopefully they'll go online and read at nccivitas.org.
It's a featured article. It's called North Carolina's Blueprint, Eviscerate and Cripple Strategy is Alive and Well.
Well, that's good. And thank you again. This has been Francis DeLuca and Susan Myrick, Senior Policy Analyst for NC Civitas.
Thank you, Francis.
If you like this show and want to hear a segment again or want to check out one of our past shows, head over to freedomactionnetwork.com or check out some of the other shows the Freedom Action Network has to offer, like Free to Brew, where host Greg Polscher uncovers how freeing up markets, protecting property rights, and an entrepreneur spirit has rejuvenated the craft beer industry. Listen to the show for interviews and commentary from brewers, policy experts, and more. Let Greg show you there is liberty in beer. Or check out the NC Gun Dad Show, hosted by me, Matt Calder, where I talk about guns, gun rights, and Second Amendment issues of the day. Also, where we explore how being a father informs being a responsible gun owner and more. Again, that can all be found on the Freedom Action Network website at www.freedomactionnetwork.com. Are you a gun guy? Are you a gun girl? Do you know the difference between a clip and a magazine? Have you gotten into more arguments about 9mm, 40, and 45 than you care to admit? Then you need to go over to the Freedom Action Network and check out the NC Gun Dad Show, where we talk about guns, gear, accessories, and a whole lot more every week. I'm Matt Calder, and I was just another gun guy until the birth of my daughter. Then I became the NC Gun Dad. Join us weekly for a new episode of the NC Gun Dad Show, uploaded every Friday at www.freedomactionnetwork.com, and then click on the NC Gun Dad Show. All right, Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
It is good to be here, Matt.
So tell me what we're talking about today.
Well, actually, considering it's Thanksgiving, I hate to do this, but we're going to talk about a topic, college readiness. And it's a hard topic to talk about this time of year, but it's the reason we're doing it is because it's important. It's important to our kids. It's important to parents. It's important to anyone concerned about North Carolina. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can slide into it first. Well, you mentioned Thanksgiving, and it is Thanksgiving week, and this show will come out after Thanksgiving. But so what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm actually going to be in town here. I'm going to celebrate with friends and actually look forward to not driving.
Yeah, because where's family for you?
Family's kind of all over. I've got family here. I got family in Wisconsin, family in various other states, Pennsylvania, Virginia, etc. So all over.
It'll be a nice low-key Thanksgiving for you in comparison to a year you're all over the place, I guess.
That's correct. Look forward to it.
That's not too bad. I've only got two Thanksgivings to do on Thanksgiving this year, so I'm doing better than usual.
Good. But the fewer, the better.
Oh, yeah. You get to actually stay in one place. So I'll split the day between my wife's mom or my wife's parents and then my mother. And it'll be a good time. Of course, it's actually my mom's birthday on Thanksgiving this year. It happens every few years. It'll land on the same day.
Actually, I've got a daughter whose birthday, Lizzie. My daughter Lizzie is born on November 25th. So similar situation where every now and then it falls on Thanksgiving and she feels, understandably, short shrifted.
A little upstaged, maybe.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. So we're here to talk about college readiness. We're talking about high school seniors and not just seniors, but through the way up through high school graduation, how our state is doing in getting students ready to go to college, which even just starting from that point, I think is a little, I mean, it's one marker of success, I would think. In a situation where there's vocational training options, there's other options after high school than a four-year degree, but this is sort of the model we're talking about today, right, is the path to a four-year degree.
Yeah, it's important because North Carolina's entire educational system is geared towards creating students who are ready for either a four-year or further education, or a career in work or another vocation. So it's geared towards either college readiness or career readiness. And they've been very outspoken about that. That's been the case. Those are the values in many respects that have driven Common Core, and that's a stated objective of the State Board of Education, that students should graduate being either ready for post-secondary education or prepared for work. And that's a stated outcome of our educational system, and you know, we need to understand what that is and if we're being effective in doing that.
Okay, so then there's a bunch of different measures we can use, but that I want to dig into, but the overall picture is not so great.
It's not so great, Matt, and without delving too much into the testing data on this, and there's a lot of it, let's just kind of consider let's consider two indicators. One of them is the actual ACT test, which every 11th grader in North Carolina takes. And
is that every student now? When I came through a few years ago, it was, everyone took the SAT, but the ACT was optional.
That was changed in the last few years.
Okay.
So that every student now takes the ACT. And it's an exam that gauges college readiness. Okay. And if it also includes various benchmarks and subject areas, well, that allows you to get an indicator of how ready a particular student is for college. If you look at the data, it's only about 31% of students actually met all the benchmarks, the ACT benchmarks, and being college and career ready. And so that's not good news. 31% of all 11th graders, that's not a good number. It's not a good number for anybody, and we really need to improve that. That's an indication that there are a number of things that need to change and that, you know, we need to review what we're doing and what we're not doing.
Okay, so again, kind of going back to what are we talking about numbers-wise here about, like, how students are ready, how many students are ready to go and be successful beyond high school? I mean, because we were talking beforehand about how it's we're graduating more students, but we're not getting more students ready. What kind of I guess percentages are we looking at here? What are the big numbers, I guess?
Well, let's step back a little bit. Every year, the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction survey students, high school, I believe it's seniors or juniors, regarding their intentions post high school. And 82% of respondents in 2015 said that they plan on either going to a 4-year or 2-year higher education institution, either a community college or a 4-year college. So if you stand back and look at, you know, what kids are planning on doing, the overwhelming majority, again, about 82%, said they plan on going to college, whether, again, 2-year or 4-year school. So that leaves about 18% that are either going into a work, the work world, that will work immediately at a company or some of their business, or to go into the military. Those are usually the available options. And again, they run this survey just about annually, I think it is. And so the point is, you know, 8 out of 10 students say they're going to go to college. So the obvious question is, are we preparing kids, you know, to be able to seamlessly make that transition from high school to college? And I stated before, a number, well, the percentage of students that took the ACT exam that actually met all 4 benchmark areas, and it was 31%. Now, if you actually go down lower in the grade levels, like the EOC and EOG exams, and of course the end of grade exams, you find out that problem is not limited to the higher grades. Only 49% of all the students taking EOC and EOG exams scored at the proficiency or higher level, which is basically an indicator of whether or not the test takers are ready for college.
But we're graduating these students. I mean, so a third, that's under a third.
That's right. That's the problem, is we're graduating students. And in fact, the Department of Public Instruction trumpets the all-time, our graduate 4-year graduation rate, and that it's at an all-time high, which is about 86.5% right now, which means 4 years after a freshman class, approximately 86-87% of students that came in as freshmen graduate 4 years later. That's what the 4-year graduation rate means. Now, parents and everyone else wants to think that when you graduate, it means that you're immediately ready for the next challenge, the next step in your education or step in your work career. And today we're focusing on education, and what we're saying here is, based on the test data and a lot of other figures, we're graduating people, but they're really not ready for the next step.
So are they finding success in colleges, or, I mean, it's, do they adjust as needed? I mean, do we have any kind of data on what happens to them after they leave? I mean, and I think that would be a hard thing to maybe collect, but especially people go out of state, people go and do different things, people take different paths to get to where they're going to end up with their degree.
Well, but there are ways of tracking success, and one of the things that North Carolina tries to do, and a lot of states try to do, is obviously get a handle on how well students do after they leave. One of the ways of gauging college readiness is, you know, is trying to identify or trying to track, do students need remediation classes? In other words, are they well enough prepared for, say, math or English classes that they can step in right away and take freshman English classes, freshman math classes, and not have to kind of backfill in areas where they might not have been exposed to, might not have the competencies that colleges and universities assume that students have. So remediation rates are one way of gauging that college readiness. And nationally, the U.S., not only North Carolina, but the U.S. has had a problem with high numbers in that areas. And also, I mean, to be on both sides of this issue, there are some problems with getting valid numbers here. But if we just deal with the numbers that we've been working with nationally, remediation rates are probably anywhere between 45% of students that enter a four-year college or enter a two-year college, take either a math or an English course in order to move on to the next area. That's really a lot higher than most people expect. And it's an area that we've been trying to bring down. In North Carolina, about 4 years ago, if you look at some of this data, North Carolina had a four-year remediation rate of about 63%. Now, what that means is, and this was gauged mostly, this was gauged for two-year community colleges, that meant that 60% of the freshmen enrolled in community colleges took either a math or an English class that needed, that was classified as developmental or remediation. So that's a class that allows you to move on in that particular subject, but it's required in order to move on. That's fairly high. That's a lot higher than most people want.
That's significant. You want the number to be zero. So
that's correct.
That's a significant number.
And that number has been coming down. Now, we'd like to think, if you look at the data and watch the figures that are published every year, you'll notice that it's coming down. It went from about 60 to 40 to 30. And most recently, Terry Stoops, my friend at John Locke, had reported earlier this month that number is actually 25%. Now, in other words, one in four students instead of, you know, almost the two out of three students are taking remediation classes. Now, I would like to think that that's come down because our preparation and our students are performing better academically, but unfortunately, that's not the case. The reduction is due more to policy changes. In other words, what's been happening is the requirements for actually taking remediation classes has been changing. And in other words, if you took classes in math, 4 years worth of math 1 year and graduated, you're not required in the last 5 years, you're not required to actually be in the pool for remediation. So what's been happening is the available pool of students that have to actually be remediated is shrinking. So that number, the percentage in remediation classes, is actually going down. So that's one way that I think we're kind of scamming the system and producing better numbers. But if you actually look behind the numbers, we're not producing better students.
So, I mean, is it a problem of focus? Is it a focusing on getting the graduation rate up for high schools without worrying about, you know, the quality, the quantity of the graduates, not the quality? I mean, where are we breaking down? And you're saying that it's not just starting right at the top, that looking back in grades earlier, there's an issue. So where are we going off track?
Well, there's a lot of pressure right now, internally, you know, within North Carolina, even externally, in the country, to really improve our graduation rate for a lot of reasons, whether they'd be economic, social, you know, personal, whatever. We need to be able to get kids through school, get them either in college or have them be able to start out in a work life and be contributing productive citizens. I don't think any of us will argue with that. If you look at our high school graduation rate about as recently as 10 years ago, it was in the in the high 60s, which means that almost 40%, 35-40% of our students, you know, that started out as freshmen didn't graduate in 4 years. Many of those didn't graduate in 5 years. Now, thankfully, we've improved on that, and there's been an effort to do so, but I think in our haste to do so, there's been a lot that's been sacrificed. And what we're talking about today is some of that even though the numbers improve, the college readiness has not.
Which, I mean, then you're missing out there, and just that's the whole point.
Right.
We're not trying to create high school graduates so much so
we're
as trying
to
have create
educated.
Yeah.
Educated contributing citizens. And I hope that some of this discussion and realizing that we seem to be obsessed with the numbers and not obsessed with, you know, the actual qualities that a graduate has when they come out, and making sure that they can contribute, you know, that they can find their way in life, that they can, you know, have the skills to be a contributing member of society. That focus, I think we need to refocus on that, not to lose sight of, you know, overall numbers, but obviously there has to be kind of a reframing and kind of a refocusing on the qualities, you know, and making sure that our graduates have the competencies, the character, the skills that they need when they either go to work or enter higher education, and not have the problems, you know, that we see today, because far too many of them lack that, because we seem to be too concerned or overly concerned at making sure we get kids through the door and out into college or the workforce. And that's a problem that really needs to have solutions, and have solutions soon.
And do they partially just expect that they'll go to college and then they'll pick up the slack in college? College will pick up what they've missed out on. Is there some expectation of that?
Well, I think if you look at the problem in the whole education pipeline, it just gets moved from one level to the other. Colleges hope that high schools, you know, will improve the problem. High schools hope that, you know, middle schools and elementary schools will improve the problem, and things just keep getting pushed down the line. I mean, it's a complicated problem, obviously, and we can't, I mean, I don't mean to imply that we lay all these problems, you know, at the school door, because there are many factors involved here. But obviously, if we're talking about, you know, what's the responsibility of schools, what's the stated responsibility, we should, you know, have the expectation that when someone graduates from high school, they should be able to enter college or the workforce and be able to function productively. That's not unreasonable. I think most parents expect that. Most taxpayers expect that. When we look at the numbers that we're looking at today and what we're talking about, that should send alarms everywhere. And we need to address these problems. We need to know not only that we've got serious problems with trying to educate kids in the right way, but, you know, we've done bad things in trying to cover up these problems with changes that we've done on remediation rates. And I think we've trumpeted a lot of these high school graduation improvements. You know, they've been kind of hollow Pyrrhic victories, because if you look underneath, you know, our kids don't have really what they need when they get out. Now, they may be included in a number, but if you look closely, I don't think there'd be a lot of people that would disagree with me.
Right, and whenever we talk about this sort of topic, I think about a someone who was an acquaintance, I would say. And when I was in college, he was not in college. He was in the town, and he had graduated high school and he was working somewhere or another. I don't know where, but he literally could not read. He did not know how to read. Had gone through the entire school system, getting pushed on to the next grade, to the next grade, to the next grade. Never had been held back a grade. He had a high school diploma and could not read. And that still just, even to this day, just astounds me that you could be in that situation where you would not have someone along the way who put their foot down or had the ability to and said, we have to fix this. We have to stop this now. I mean, they just pass the torch, pass it on, pass the buck over and over and over and over on up the line. And that's not someone who maybe isn't college ready or it doesn't quite have it all the way there. Or maybe need some help in this area. This person fundamentally, they cannot read. They cannot really function in society. You can't pay your taxes if you can't read. Above and beyond learning how to pay your taxes, you can't if you can't read.
You can pay your taxes if you don't read. If you can't read, you can't do a lot other much else, you know. But in fact, I remember, when I was in Washington in the mid 80s, there was a story that erupted there of a Washington Redskin player. I forget his name, but the story was, he came forth. He was a fairly popular player, and he came out and admitted to the public he could not read, and it became quite a story. And he was, you know, I think at the time a millionaire. I mean, he was very well paid, obviously functioned and so forth. But he just came forth, you know, to highlight the plight and also to kind of unmask, you know, the problems he's had, because obviously in any field, you have to be able to read.
Yeah, he essentially would only be as successful as he was in sports because people covered it up, I'm sure. I mean, we can get into what I think, you know, yeah. The North Carolina, UNC, Chapel Hill, all that sort of thing. And
but you bring up secret you, of you bring they, up a good point, Matt, mm-hmm. in that there are massive pressures to move kids along from each level. There are pressures on principals to get students in and out of grades, you know, because their poor performance is based oftentimes on numbers. They don't want to hold kids back. There are pressures amongst principals or on principals to move students along. Oftentimes they think, well, if you hold a student back, you're going to stigmatize them and they're going to alienate them from their peer group. Well, the other side of that is you oftentimes think that you will help them more because they will be able to function, they'll have mastery of the subject, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that's a lively debate amongst educators. It's not a lively debate amongst most parents, though, because most parents think that in the long run, if a kid does not have the necessary skills and academic background to go on to the next level, most parents think he should be held back and that you're doing the child a service by doing that, because oftentimes what happens is when you get passed on, the problems are just compounded.
Right. And I mean, it's just so, I guess, far removed a topic for me or for you, for someone who hasn't experienced that it's hard for us to kind of, it's hard for me to accept the idea that there's people who are so ill prepared and
it is. And it's, I think it's shocking to people to understand that we do have kids that are graduating that are like that and they're ill prepared. And I'm going to put on my commentary hat here. We're doing a disservice to kids to move them along to the next level, whether it be grade school to high school or high school to college. We need to shine a light on this, and we need to change it. We need to improve it so that kids, when they graduate, they have the mental faculties, they have the background, they have the preparation they need so that they can step into the level that they need to be at and not take 2-3 years additional because they don't have the background.
Right. I mean, we're setting them up for massive, massive failure. And in doing so, we're putting this drain on our system, on public assistance programs. I mean, if you pass through a student who cannot read, literally cannot read, cannot be successful to their potential, that their apparent potential, and then they fall onto public assistance because they haven't been given the tools to be successful, because no one said, stop, hold up, let's grab this problem and let's fix it now so that Timmy can be successful going forward. You're hurting society, hurting ourselves, but on a personal, singular person level, you're taking away or putting a huge number of roadblocks in the way of this person's future and potential by not standing up for them and saying, we need to fix this so Timmy can read.
That's the challenge. That's the challenge, is having the wherewithal, having the courage, having the resources to say, we're not going to keep doing this. Because there are costs involved. There are many pressures, you know, to just keep moving kids through the system. I mean, we all see them. Nobody wants to be held back. But you're not doing a child a favor by moving them along, and you're making a sham of the entire educational system, and that's what we have to change.
Definitely. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Matt. Happy Thanksgiving.
You as well. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you to Bob. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to Francis. Thank you to you, the listeners. If you're listening again on the app, we're already glad to have you as a subscriber, as long as you've already pressed that subscribe button. If not, please go ahead and do that, because then you won't have to go out searching us anymore. If you're on the Freedom Action Network listening, we would love to have you over as a subscriber and take all the effort out of getting the show to you. And if you're listening out on the airwaves, I direct you to freedomactionnetwork.com and check out some of the archived content. There's a lot of great stuff on there. Or if you are listening on the air as well, I would direct you to check out your phone, open up the podcasting app. It's probably already on your phone. If you're an Apple user, it's definitely already there. If you're an Android user, go out and find one in the Play Store, download it, and search for What Matters in North Carolina, and subscribe to the show there. Make sure you're calling that call-in line at 919-747-8063. Again, that's 919-747-8063. Leave us a message, 1 or 2 minutes. Keep it clean and concise. It can be a rant. It can be something we already talked about, something you want us to talk about. It can be anything under the sun. I will listen to them. I will curate them. And if they're good, I will play them on the air. And if we use them in a segment or to build a building blocks of a segment, we'll definitely give you a shout out. So again, that number is 919-747-8063. Thank you again to our sponsor for this week, the Civitas Institute, North Carolina's conservative voice. Without the Civitas Institute and its support, we would not have the Freedom Action Network, we would not have What Matters in North Carolina, and you would not be listening to this show right now. And if you like the show, then it's probably a good thing that they did all that for us here. So again, that's nccivitas.org, North Carolina's conservative voice. We'll catch you next time.